This is the Valley Outdoors, and we are glad you guys are with us today. We've got a ton of cool stuff to talk about, and we're going to be talking about it with, who's here? Don, you're here.
I'm here.
Ava?
Always here.
Always here. Yeah. Has to be. Yeah. She can turn our mics on or off at whim.
You're not hearing it if she's not here.
You are absolutely correct. We're going to talk about some tips and tricks, or maybe some crappies to help you out with that. Should you stop feeding birds because of the avian flu? And what are the limits on Red Lake? That and more when we return. Ashkenam Resort on Ash River in northern Minnesota is a destination you're looking for. Ashkenam offers everything for the angler or family vacation with access to Lake Cabotogama, Namekin Lake, and the gateway to Voyageurs National Park. Thousands of acres of clean, refreshing water all available to you. This is your destination for your next fishing trip or family vacation. Check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. Do I need to say walleyes, northern pike, and crappies?
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Well done.
Yes.
This is the most important weekend in Minnesota outdoors.
In Minnesota, yep.
Yep.
It is.
Each state has its own. Wisconsin, it's deer opener.
Well, right.
You know, Minnesota, the fishing opener.
Yep. It's a big deal in Minnesota.
It is. Rather unique scenario in that it's going to be roughly what temperature, Don? As an rough average, probably.
Well, I think they're shooting for the low 80s, which you know, which is kind of unusual. It depends upon where you're going to be in this great state. But have you ever been up there when the opener happens up in the middle, central, north part of the state?
You and I have.
Yes, but I was if you're taking off to the cabin at 3 o'clock on Friday.
Oh no! Yeah,
good
no,
luck.
No, I. Totally, yeah, not good.
Try to get through Rogers.
Creeping and beeping, not a good thing.
Yep.
35W.
I like that. Creeping and beeping. I've never heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
It's about every third vehicle's got a boat behind it.
Oh, of course. And then every 19th vehicle is pulled off the side of the road because the bearings are overheated and it's,
yep.
Or a blown tire.
Tire.
Yeah. That's normal. Or yep. Then they overheat as well. And of course, this weekend, you'll have all three.
Right.
So just make sure you check. If you pull over a gas stop, check your tires and your bearings just temperature wise.
Just touch them.
Just see where they're at. And if you come back with a third degree burn, you know you have a problem.
Have you ever been with anybody that's blown their bearings?
I have not.
I have. And it happened, if you know where Cook, Minnesota is.
Oh, very well.
There is nobody around there.
And well, now there is, but
well, I mean,
many years ago.
This is probably 10, 12, maybe 18 years ago. But we had one of our guys coming up. I mean, it's, time kind of passes, you know. But it
10,
anyway,
20, 30 years ago.
Yeah,
whatever.
I forget how many years I've been going up there. And he literally melted his axles, you know, the bearings went on both sides.
Yes.
So he stops on the side of the road and he's able to get a hold of a dealer up the road a ways. And the dealer was amazing because we're actually on our way
to Canada.
And he comes out and helps him get that trailer in the water to take the boat off of it.
So they can.
And then he put that boat trailer on another trailer, took it back to the shop, came back with a good boat trailer of his own, And they loaded the boat up on it, hooked onto it, and about 4 hours later, he showed up at our destination in Canada.
What?
And he said, on your way back, just stop by the dealership. We'll swap them out again, and you can take care of it. I'll have your boat trailer all ready for you. That was pretty cool.
Minnesota nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You don't always get that kind of service?
No.
Every marine dealer? No.
Well, especially at the
I'll volumes. Check your equipment before you take off.
Just
you
make
know.
It easy.
And I'm sure there's many other states that the fishing's heavy this coming weekend.
A couple shots of grease nice to the bearing buddies, and you know, at least it'll help you a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't.
You watch. I mean, all of our guys, when we go, everybody gets out when we stop at a gas station. They walk around. They put their finger on every hub just to make sure there's nothing warming up in there.
It's not a good thing.
No.
No, it's definitely not. So lots of travel. Please be careful out there. And, of course, remember the two things that are important. Number one, safety-wise, wear the lanyard. It's the law now in Minnesota. You need to wear the safety lanyard, whether you attach it to your vest, you attach it to your leg. Just don't get stuck with a $150 ticket if you're driving your boat. You get pulled over. And, of course, pull the plug, clean, drain, dry. But just pull the plug, because if you are on the road with a plug in, you can get pulled over, and it doesn't have to be a DNR. It can be anybody, any type of law enforcement. So make sure you just do those simple, easy steps, and it'll make you much better off.
And so. You have to now dispose of your bait, too, when you come off the water.
Yeah. Yeah, big thing. Mm-hmm. Kind of a sad note. Recently, if anybody's been following at any point in your life the bass fishing and tournament fishing, Mr. Ray Scott has recently passed away. He's the co-founder of BASS and one of the foremost promoters of catch and release in bass fishing. He's the starter of it. He was 88 years old. He had transformed, basically, bass fishing from a tranquil southern pastime into a multi-billion dollar industry. And he had recently passed away at his home in Pentella, Florida. Nope, sorry, Alabama. He was basically a visionary. Don, I mean, really, it was...
What was it? Any idea what the first year of BASS was?
1967.
Yeah.
And roughly 650,000 subscribers, and he, that's for the Bassmaster magazine. And really, the big thing is the catch and release side of it. Mm-hmm. That was the start of that whole process. I mean, in the past, people would just come in with a stringer of bass, you weigh them, and then take them home.
Right.
And they really worked at getting that and so improved that methodology. And then, of course, the expansion of that type of fishing. And it turned it into about $125 billion a year environment and employs more than 800,000 people nationwide in the bass and competitive angling side of the fence. So, yeah, pretty crazy. He also pushed for a lot of different sport fish restoration acts, the Wallop Bro Act. Heck of a guy, amazing gentleman, and he will be missed. So we condolences and best wishes to his family and all those that were friends of him and what he had done for the fishing industry. So kind of a sad deal, but again, a positive impact in the industry, and he will be remembered for a long period of time. So speaking of being remembered, don't forget us. We're going to be back right after these words. We always like to have you check us out on The Valley Outdoors. And where else, Donald?
On Facebook.
Facebook. You are correct. Like us, please. We certainly enjoy having you guys contribute. If you have some big fish, that'd be awesome. Anything in the outdoors, if you have something funny that came up, you know the outdoor stuff from TikTok, etc. Somebody comes up with something funny.
Send us a link.
Please send us, and we will get it on the site so everybody can enjoy it. This is fun.
Yeah, that's fun. We used to do the video thing, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You know, the one thing about the opener, Don, let's say you're successful. You go out and get your limit of walleyes, right?
Yep.
Well, then what are you going to do? Not much else to do. Wrong. Go out and get yourself some crappies. Go have fun. Multi-species is where it's at. You can't tell me a meal of crappies and walleye is not a good meal.
Oh, no.
It'd be a bonus situation.
Right.
And one of the things I find that's kind of funny, I picked up on it a while ago, and all too often everybody says, well, how do I find a school? You know, what do you do to find a school of fish? And oftentimes what your best bet is, troll for them. Throw a bobber out. Throw in a real lightweight jig with a larva or minnow on it and pull it behind the boat and slow troll at about 3-4 tenths of a mile an hour behind the bobber. Those crappies will absolutely crush it. When you run into those crappies, you hit spot lock, cast that bobber right back out, and now you're going to have some fun. Just locating that school, you can usually do it, use some side imaging, you can do that as well, but all too often there's sometimes you just aren't going to have the ability to see it, and you may be spread out, and sometimes you can run into them like that. It's awesome.
Early season, with the crappies kind of be in shallows right now if they're spawning?
They will be, but there's sometimes when they start and the water gets warm like this real quick, they'll move out to that first edge of the weeds or in the weeds area. And you control right along the edge and then find where those fish are at.
And they start schooling up.
Crush it. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. Because that shallow water with the last 4 or 5 days, warm temperature, the northern bays, they're going to be.
It should help this opener.
Oh, it will.
Have you heard how far north what lakes are open yet?
Are any of that iced up yet? I was trying to talk to Chris Granrud, one of our friends from Lake of the Woods.
Yeah.
Marine Ideas Guide Service, and I couldn't get a hold of him. So my guess is after the show, he'll probably end up calling me. But it's one of those things. I wonder, if his Wally opener will be good. He'll probably give me a call. Hey, we crushed him.
Right.
On ice. Yeah. So you don't know. It's one of those right now, because, there's a lot of ice. There was a lot of ice.
But it's going to be getting real unsafe.
28-inch. Well, yeah. Don't walk on it.
No.
No, not a good thing. I thought kind of a fun story, Don, was something I pulled up the other day. I was perusing the internet, as I'm known to do, and it's trolling's surprise origins in fishing.
It's got to go back a long way.
Yep. 400 years ago, trolls haunted the dark forests of Scandinavia, Don. Did you know that? Looking for lost.
Tell me it was invented by trolls.
Looking for lost humans to club in the head with trees, drag them back to the depths of their caves, and eat them. Now they haunt the dark forest of social media, looking for lost posters to goad them with inflammatory comments, drag the depths of pointless, passionate arguments, and emerge for as long as possible. Those two figures have a lot in common. The term trolling, surprisingly, has no clear etymological connection to Nordic mythology. Despite compelling and controversial arguments to the contrary, it's one of the definitions of troll that actually comes to us more directly from the world of fishing. Right?
Okay.
The mythological and marine trolling both have their origins to casual violence, the old French hunting term troller, which meant to wander around looking for something to kill or to go hunting for game with no specific purpose. Yes?
They hadn't discovered a catch and release yet, huh?
Soon the casual hunting style gained more popular and specific meaning in the world of fishing, which incentivized a patient, meandering approach. Since the 16th century, trolling is described as a process by which one or more baited hooks are drawn slowly through the waters, either by hanging off the end of a slow-moving boat or by a person slowly winding a line in, coming to forefront. Keeping the bait moving gives it the appearance of life, making it a much more attractive option for fish, and the methods become the industry standard in use commercially and recreationally. Makes sense.
Sure.
Doesn't matter whether it's commercially or not. You've seen those big boats with the big tuna, and you throw the hook over, the boat's moving along, and you just haul them over the top. The sense of moving bait and the word's significance in the 21st century, where it was used to describe similar behavior, decoy military operations, and most commonly on the internet, course, trolling. The web's early days in 1990, a Usenet comment of folklore enthusiasts used the urban definition and adapted the process to identify inexperienced newbie posters in certain groups. Really, the point comes down to most things the internet, the process escalated into unpleasantness. And really, when it comes down to it, Although the term originated more specifically in the baiting process of fishery and the mythological overtones of troll, an ugly, bloodthirsty, vagabond humanoid wandering around the wilderness looking to feast on humans, it gave the new level of significance for fishing. And what a amazing thing that it did for all anglers.
Well, it's kind of the go-to for beginners.
Mm-hmm. You
know, put a plug on and throw it out and drag it
around.
Let
her rip.
Yep.
Tater chip.
Yep. Have you ever done the speed troll with a big spoon?
I haven't used spoons.
For pike?
I haven't used spoons for that. I generally park and throw a bigger bait and more targeted.
I did on one flying trip into Canada. I go, you know, we got to the last day and we caught so many walleyes. Arms were getting tired. So I said, I'm going to try the speed trolling. Of course, all we had was 6-horse motors. And threw out about, you know, 50 yards of line with a daredevil type spoon. Only I think I was using a Johnson Silver Minnow with a trailer on it. And the motor wide open. As fast as it would go.
Let her rip.
And let her rip. And I was shocked. I think we landed about 8 pike that day.
It's
they
fun.
Catch it. I mean, there's you can't go too fast for a pike if they see it. The flash in the water, they're after it.
No, and surprisingly enough, too, is you many times can't go shallow enough. When you've got an influx of cold water coming into a warm body of water, mm-hmm. those pike will sit right there. And
in the warm.
And right in the edge of the cold.
Yep.
You want to talk about fun.
Yeah.
I can't say any more about it because they would give away something as far as fishing locations and various places that I've been to.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this. You want to talk about fun. Last year on a rip and wrap, I ended up getting like 5 pike between 28 and 37 inches.
Sure.
And I got a over 60 inch sturgeon in the mouth.
Yep.
And I hooked another one like 5 minutes after that. So, yeah, a lot of fun. A lot of fun, and a lot of fun. Speaking of, we are going to be back with more right after this. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Well, Donald, lots of interesting views in the outdoors and a lot of different avenues, and came across one such story. Had to do with the avian flu and people, they're recommending certain places, the Raptor Center, they're saying stop feeding the birds. Not a good thing, because the feeders, they congregate birds, red-winged blackbirds having close proximity to each other, increases the transmission of avian flu, which is really happening across the whole United States right now and North America. And the short answer to the headline at the top is, yeah, probably should stop feeding the birds. Long answer is, you should probably not have the bird feeders out, you know, obviously, because it brings so many birds into one place and they can spread that disease. If you don't have bird seed out, birds aren't going to starve, right? I mean, it's not going to create anything. It's coming into that side of the fence. But what they don't want is the spread of what's called the highly pathogenic avian influenza, which is what it's called, highly contagious to birds. And been lots of reports of waterfowl with the newly highly contagious form of avian influenza this last year. And they migrating north, spreading it to other species this spring. Birds already affected in Minnesota. And of course, the Maine Wildlife Rehab Center Minnesota stopped taking in certain birds, including ducks, geese, herons, gulls, etc. And they've advised people to stop feeding birds. So
University of Minnesota Raptor Center stopped all public tours and sees 90 to 100% fatality rate in infected birds of prey that are brought to them. This is just about what is known at this moment about wild birds. Seven flocks of poultry in Minnesota, as of the article we're pulling this from, have tested positive for the HPAI, and all have been killed. And millions of poultry around the country have been culled due to that HPAI infection. In fact, it's so contagious that an infected duck could fly over a yard, poop, and the landing in the yard would infect another bird. And ducks congregating in open for migration, they spread to others. Birds of prey, like great horned owls, would see a sick duck, eat it, feed it to the young, and therefore perpetuate that whole scenario. Same thing, blue jays and crows scavenge a duck carcass, and so it continues. So that's a sad deal. It really is a sad deal. And, you know, if you look at Alaska, there's a lot of eagles up there, and they're obviously a scavenger-type bird. And if there's roadkill or whatever, then that is also a big issue. So biologists are recommending that the bird feeders, that bird feeding stop. Obviously, to prevent hungry bears from scavenging the feeders, you should absolutely stop feeding birds. If your neighbors have backyard chickens, ducks, or even pet birds inside, don't feed or have a feeder out. It's that contagious.
Hmm.
Pretty crazy. So, some ways, it feels like the West Nile virus, the author says. And back then, they did pick that up for the Raptor Center, and so many birds of prey were affected. You wondered if they ever have any red-tailed hawks left when it was over. This person remembered dead crows all over the place, and they did bounce back. But anything we can do to help those species and keep them flourishing is going to be a big thing. So I know you're going to be big on this one. Ava, you're going to be big on this one. Invasive species in the U.S. that you can eat.
Yeah, we kind of mentioned this last week.
Yep, we never got a chance to get to it. Yep. Invasive creatures obviously cause damage to the ecosystem every year. If you've ever been to Texas, you know the feral hog situation is...
Right.
In fact, it's not just Texas. It's everywhere.
Down south.
And
it's moving up, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. And those just literally tear everything up. It's not a good thing. Well, they aren't bad by nature, but it's when they start going where they're not wanted, then it seems to be a problem. And of course, we experience that with the fish side of it. When animals are transplanted to areas where they have no predators or environmental checks, they can wreak havoc on that. In the U.S. alone, there's over 6,500 alien species that take an estimated $123 billion bite out of the economy annually. And that is just crazy number. One of the ways to fight back is to dig in and see what we can do to eliminate that issue. Invasive species cook-off. How's that sound?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Publishing recipe collections, enlisting celebrity chefs, defenders of native fish and wildlife, and hoping to adopt a new motto. If you can't beat them, eat them. Here's eight invasive species that you can hunt or catch and bring home for dinner. Number one, feral pigs.
Sure.
And the word feral pigs looking for food in the woods, yeah, they're pretty much everywhere looking for food. The total lack of restraint is called going hog wild. If you've ever seen the destruction of feral pigs, can visit on a food plot, crop field, or suburban lawn. At that $123 billion damage estimate might be a bit conservative, as you and I, we've all seen the damage that they can do. From the tip of Florida to Oklahoma Panhandle, all but a handful of counties have confirmed pig populations. And contrary to what people claim, wild hogs are the descendants of domestic escapees. Handled correctly in the field and kitchen, they can be just as good. The American bullfrog.
Yeah, well, I don't think we have them up here in the Midwest.
Nope. They're native to much of the area, but in places like Hawaii, they are a problem. And they are an eating machine. They eat ducks, ducklings, rats, bats, bass, and other bullfrogs with equal abandon. And they are throughout much of the U.S. range, from Florida to Nova Scotia, the Atlantic coast to Wisconsin, and across the Great Plains. But in areas where it's been introduced, like California, Arizona, Hawaii, it is a voracious predator, exploded, and it's outcompeting every other frog species in existence.
Bullfrog, they get big, don't they?
They can stretch to over a foot long and weigh more than a pound.
Okay.
Nutria, which is a like mink. So they're found in 20 states. Louisiana, signing up for statewide nutria control program. $6 you can earn for every nutria tail you turn in. Kind of cool deal.
Yep.
They can reach 20 pounds. Northern snakehead, we all love that.
I'm looking
right?
for the edibles.
What?
Aren't these all supposed to be edible?
Yeah, northern snakehead it is.
Okay.
It's good. It's very good. Snakehead, you know, fish. Asian carp, I'm sorry, but I'm not buying that one. It's
you could probably smoke it.
You could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cold smoke.
A lot of money put into that. The lionfish, those are amazing. Poisonous spines on them and a stomach capable of expanding 30 times. And they eat a ton of reef dwellers, so it's not a good fish, but they can be exceptional if you know how to clean them properly. Green iguanas, how about that one?
Mm.
Where are they at?
Native to Central America, tropical South America, and some Caribbean islands, the green iguanas are extensively everywhere. And last but not least, on your favorite, the armored catfish. Texas, Florida, and Hawaii, they are an invasive, and they are devastating to the riverbanks, and they just destroy the rivers.
Never heard of them.
Yep.
Armored catfish.
Yep. Armored catfish.
What do they taste like?
Chicken, last time I checked.
Yeah. I'm just going to bite chicken.
Originally, they were brought in to eliminate algae. And they escaped and thrived and flourished. So
yeah, next you'll have recipes for all.
I will. I'll have recipes next week. Hey, hope you guys have a fantastic opening fishing weekend. For those of you guys in Minnesota, the rest of the area, hope you have a great time out in the boat or wherever you're going to be on the water. For the Valley Outdoors, for Don, myself, and Ava, we are out.